Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Ilana Levine.
Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. He's a lot of end friends with some revelations. Little known back to the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Hey everyone, new episodes of Little Known Facts drop every Monday and you can find them on your favorite podcast provider. Also, if you go to the website, littleknownfactspodcast.com, you'll find behind the scenes photos, videos, and interviews and lots more on the gallery page. And if you are loving these intimate, candid conversations with all the artists who come on the show, please head over to the contributions page. I depend on these donations to continue to bring you these interviews every week. So if you love the show, please donate. Little known fact about my guest today. She was nominated for her first Tony, doing her first Broadway show. Welcome, Emily Skaggs.
A-OK. A-OK.
My guest today is the Tony-nominated actress, Emily Skaggs. Emily's theater credits include both the off-Broadway and Broadway productions of Fun Home, for which she was nominated for a Tony Award for the role of Middle Allison. Other theater credits include And I and Silence, Take Me Along, Our Town, and the Shakespearean Jazz Show. Television credits include the ABC miniseries When We Rise in a role she shares with Mary Louise Parker, Don't Think Twice, Salem, and The Miseducation of Cameron Post. She went to LaGuardia High School, which is the Fame High School, and Emerson College. She was born and raised in New York City. I feel as if this is the very beginning of what will become a very long resume. Welcome, Emily Skaggs, to the podcast.
Oh, man, my heart's fluttering.
My heart is fluttering. I'm so thrilled that we were able to work this out because you are a busy lady. So
yes.
I've been watching When We Rise. Mm-hmm. It's a really extraordinary miniseries. I'm very proud of network television for moving into such powerful content and telling stories like this about the LGBTQ community leaders.
Yeah.
And you play Roma Guy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that her real name?
That's her real name. You know, a lot of the characters in our series have extraordinary names. Cleve Jones, Ken Jones, Dion Jones, none of them are related.
Amazing.
Roma Guy. And, you know, they're people that, you know, when I got the audition, I Googled Roma Guy. I was like, who is this extraordinary person that's done all this work? And she barely had an internet presence. She's mm-hmm. one of those activists that you may have never heard of, but whose work has reverberated throughout, you know, the past
right.
40 years.
History.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's really exciting. They're not only highlighting these really important historical events in our civil rights history, but these people that I don't think have gotten the recognition that they deserve.
Now, it's not often that the people I interview, although Dan Fogler, I think, is another example of this, someone who made their Broadway debut and then was nominated or won a Tony for the part.
I know. I was listening to that podcast, that one, and I was like, oh, my God, we've got a similar track.
Yes, yes, exactly. So if we really look at this, so far, a lot of the roles you've had the great fortune and our great fortune of seeing you in were real people. So that's kind of interesting too, right? The difference between making somebody up and sort of the pressure and thrill of playing a real person. So if you can take us through, because most of us got to know you because of Fun Home.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you had a slightly unorthodox introduction into that show.
Yes.
Would you be kind enough to take us through the life of Fun Home with Emily Skeg?
You know, I'll start. My agent had dropped me.
I love that. When that best feeling ever.
Yes. I was like, oh, great. I just graduated college, moved back to New York, living at home with my parents, and I have no direction. So I called Sandy Faison, who is the head of the LaGuardia drama program, and I said, what the heck do I do? I have no idea what to do. She introduced me to her husband's agent. I met with that agent. We fell in love. A week later, she sent me out for Fun Home to be the understudy at the off-Broadway production, and I booked it. I got the audition on a Monday morning. They said they want to see you Tuesday.
What did you do at the audition?
Sort of the two long bedroom scenes in Fun Home between Medium Allison and Joan, and then they had me prepare changing my major. And, you know, I had 24 hours with this material, and changing my major is a song that I feel like it took me the 3 years that we sat with Fun Home to really actually by the end be like, oh, I really do understand every single nuance and beat of this song. It's such a beast of a song. So, you know, I was so nervous, and I went in and on Tuesday, and one of the casting directors from the public, she's incredible. She stood up in sort of this unorthodox way and read the scene with me on the other side of the table, like standing. So I was already very nervous, and then that made me even more nervous because she was right there. But it worked for Medium Allison. And then I sang the song, and, you know, it's one of those songs. The beginning of it is such a – you almost feel like you're running to keep up in a sense if you're not on top of it yourself. And I remember Janine just stopped me, you know, like 20 seconds into the song. I was like, stop, stop, stop. Just slow down. She's like, slow down and just focus on every word. And I thought, like, I've just botched this audition.
Right. Unless someone's stopping your audition to say, you're amazing.
Right.
You just don't know which way is this going to go.
You have no idea.
Like,
no
ouch.
Idea.
Ouch.
Yeah. I was like, I was hurting. I was hurting. okay. This is so confusing.
Mr. Sorry.
Yeah.
Do you need a house cleaner?
I know. Wouldn't that be better suited for dog walkers?
I mean,
I've been doing those kinds of jobs. You know, I was
look
like,
at my special skills.
Right. One of my special skills was balloon animal making. Like, I'd been working as like a children's party enthusiast was my title. Like, I was working these just crazy weird jobs. So that, you know, being an actor didn't feel like something that was possible.
And your expectation was right when you left the theater, you'd go back to balloon animals.
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
That's generally, percentage-wise, what happened.
Exactly.
Okay, so she stops you. You catch your breath.
I catch my breath. I go through, like, the first stanza of the song. I make it through the audition. And they're like, great, thank you, goodbye. And my agents are like, you'll know by tomorrow. Tomorrow rolled around. I'd been in yoga. I was like, I'm not going to get the call.
Right.
I had a voicemail saying they want you to play the understudy in Fun Home. And so that alone was like a huge victory.
Sure.
And really sort of life changing.
So we want you to be the understudy. And then what?
So I came into the show.
And you're starting tomorrow.
Actually, yeah, that was exactly what happened. They were like, they want you to come see the show tonight. And you're starting. So I sort of had to be like, sorry, children's birthday party enthusiast company.
Sorry, little Jimmy.
Yeah.
Poor little Jimmy.
Ooh.
Jimmy can come see Fun Home.
Yeah.
Would he like that for his birthday?
Exactly. Just like learn about what the future is for you, Jimmy.
Having met Jimmy, this is a good show for him to see. All right.
Exactly. So I started just by watching the show. Lisa Donner, our incredible stage manager, taught me the show during the day, and I watched it at night, and I spent, you know, like a week or two learning the show. I had my first put in with the cast, and it was fast. It was super, super fast. And, you know, I also had this feeling that, like, I had to grab the bull by the horns. If there was a chance that I was going to go on, I had to be prepared. I had to make sure I was doing the absolute best I could be doing. And I think that, you know, looking back on it, I feel like if I had not been in that place of, you know, my agents had just dropped me, I was floundering, you know, if I hadn't been in a place that was ready to grab the opportunity and run with it, I don't know if I'd be where I am now. Because I had my put in, and then about a week later, I went on for the first time with like 45 minutes notice. It was super, super fast.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm usually not very good at putting myself in denial of my own anxieties. But for some reason that night I was like, I'm doing it. We're doing it. You know, and like Judy and Beth were like, are you doing? You doing okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm great. Like totally
don't
in
touch
denial.
Me.
Yeah. What do you mean? What do you see?
What, do I not seem great?
It's like,
I'm totally ready.
Yeah.
I had a put-in rehearsal.
Yeah, exactly. I was kind of, it was like a little bit delusional, but I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And
do you remember that performance?
I do. Because, you know, it's funny things. When you do put-in, you like, there's no lights. I think I did it with a mic, but other people didn't.
Right.
So many things about it are new. And, you know, like I had been watching the show, so I crafted my performance on what I saw and what I read in the script. But like I hadn't at that point even worked with Sam Gold. I had like a half hour session with Janine to work on the song, and that was sort of it. And then the next morning they called me in and they were like, we want you to take over the role. So it was a rapid fire.
So you didn't have an awareness of any backstage drama that may have been going on,
yeah,
or that someone might be leaving. You were just there to understudy.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it happened so fast. It all happened so fast. As I've now learned, things do happen in this industry. It's fast. It's, you know, wait. And then all of a sudden, sprint. Yeah, it was kind of a crazy thing. And then once I was no longer the understudy and the role was mine, you know, there was this show that they had built already. And Sam Gold, when I understudied, he said, have you ever understudied before? And I said, no. And he said,
I'm 12.
I know.
I don't even know.
I know.
What? Where am I?
I was like, understudy, no, but I'm sure I could do it.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, I have, and it's terrifying. And he said, the job of an understudy is to support a show that everybody has built together. You have to help them keep the show afloat. And your job is to support everyone else, which I'm incredibly grateful that he said that to me. It sort of changed the way I work everywhere, I think.
What does he mean by that? And how is that different than if you're not an understudy?
You know, when you are cast in a role and, you know, from day one, you're at the table read, you're building these scenes, you're exploring it with everybody and creating the world of the show, that takes a lot of work. And I think it's can sometimes be hard. I know it was a little bit hard on Roberta when I stepped in because she had spent all this time building this relationship with this other actor, and all of a sudden I was there and we didn't have a history and we,
right,
you know, didn't have a common understanding. And so that was something you have to build. And I felt like, while that's true as an understudy, you do have to support the show that's already been built. I still think it's true when you're not an understudy. I think this is a profession where ego can creep in, and the reminder that you're building something with a group of people and you have to support them is something that I'm always driving home. I'm always telling young actors, you know, I went back to my musical theater summer camp, and they were like, what's the first thing you should remember when you do a play? And I was like, take care of each other. Take care. You're building this together.
Right.
At the end of the day, you're all up there on stage. So that profoundly changed the way I work.
So when there was a break between the public theater production and Broadway, did they tell everyone, like, we're moving to Broadway and be ready to start? Was it clear what the next step was for you?
It kind of wasn't clear for anybody where we were going to go. And for me especially, I knew I'd kind of stumbled into
this. Right, you came in through the back door.
Yeah,
in a way.
Exactly. And I was so grateful to be there at all that I sort of didn't have any expectation
that you would get to keep going with it.
Yeah, and you know, certainly I hoped. I hoped and dreamed.
Did they have people re-audition when it went to Broadway?
Yeah. We closed in January, and I got the call on Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day, Emily.
Yeah. Sam was like, "Happy Valentine's Day. By the way, we just want to let you know, Broadway is a difficult thing. It's financially, I think, a terrifying thing. And to keep a show afloat, people have to try a lot of things." So they were looking at possible celebrities for the role of B.D. Malison. They asked Anna Kendrick. They asked Shailene Woodley. You know, they asked these big name
actresses. Because they were scared.
And, you know, like the role, it was the role that a celeb would walk into and feel happy with and would be featured. And so I understood. I get it. It's a hard thing.
So you had to wait.
I waited, and they re-auditioned after a bunch of celebrities said no. They auditioned sort of like every girl in the city. And I was getting calls that were like, "Hey, you were in this. Can you give me advice?" You know, it was like, it was very strange.
Yeah, sing it really fast. Like the top of Changing My Major, like sing as quickly as possible. Like, she's not a thoughtful person. Do you want to really speed through it? Janine, she loves that. And if you could do balloon animals while you do it, it sounds like an inside joke, but it's not. So you said that. You totally said that. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, there was about 9 months of that. There was about 9 months of writing.
Of giving birth to anxiety and sadness if it doesn't happen.
Yeah. And they said, you know, you'll hear this day at 6 o'clock. And that day rolled around there. You'll hear the next week at 6 o'clock. You know, and so finally they were like, this is the final day. You will know. And I was terrified. And they were like, we'll call you by 5:20 rolled around. And I was like, I need to get a drink.
I can't
this is crazy.
It. This is torture.
It was a little bit torturous. And, you know, I grew up in New York and, you know, my parents, you know, took me to Broadway all the time. They took me to shows. That was something that they exposed me to at a very, very young age. And so it was always a dream of mine. This was a dream of mine that I didn't think I would have even the inkling of the opportunity to be a part of.
Let alone so quickly after school in something changing the history of musical theater forever.
Exactly. Something so
happened.
Important, not only on the social level, but artistically. It's an incredible, incredible show. And I'd grown up like going to the video store and renting Sunday in the Park with George.
Oh,
and, you know, getting the VHS of Into the Woods. You know, these were – it was that kind of show.
Were your parents actors also?
They are not. They're just sort of lovers of the theater. My dad's dad – my dad grew up in Ohio, and – his dad, actually, strangely enough, was an interior designer, very similar to Bruce in more ways than my family really understood until I got to Fun Home.
Wow.
Yeah, so we had sort of our own family reckoning with the show. But so he used to take buying trips to New York with his interior design partner and see shows and bring back playbills and bring back the records, the Broadway cast recordings,
albums, yeah.
And for my dad. So it was always sort of a part of his world. And then my mom's grandparents would take her to shows. So they're appreciators.
Right.
You know,
but they exposed it to you, and that's how your family celebrated.
When I was four, they took me to the Guys and Dolls revival with Nathan Lane, which is incredible. But they literally – I was four, so – the ushers were not going to let me in. They were like, she's too young. She can't come in. And my parents were like, no, you don't understand. She's a good kid. Like, she'll be fine. And then I fell in love with it and was prancing around my apartment for like weeks after going, take back, give me.
Totally.
Take back. And my parents were like, oh my God, we've ruined her.
We've created a monster. Get her a mink.
What made you think that I was one of those girls? Like, that's ridiculous for a four-year-old.
I know. But adorable. Adorable, yes. In retrospect.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah. So for a long time, that seed was planted early. I never thought it was necessarily something I could actually do.
So did you, other than adorably mimicking Faith Prince, you have an incredible voice. And I listened to Changing My Major. I listened to that a lot. Mm. But I think the world would agree that you're a singer. When did you understand that not just mimicking was how you could sing, but that you have your own voice? Was that something that you cultivated? Was it at LaGuardia? Were you a drama student or in the vocals department
in
high school?
I was a drama student at LaGuardia. Yeah, I was in the drama major. But I think that, you know, musicals, they were always something that I loved. And I don't even think that I would sing along. I don't think I even figured out that I had my own voice until maybe the Broadway production of Fun Home.
Mm-hmm.
Singing was always something I loved to do, but what always fascinated me was the acting of a song. And I didn't really find vocal confidence until the Broadway production of Fun Home. I went to college and I didn't study. I didn't do any musical
theater.
So
when you auditioned for the understudy part at the Public and had to sing, did you work with a coach? Had you ever auditioned for a musical before professionally?
I had, yes. And in high school, I did a show at the Irish Rep that was a musical. But I just didn't, I never had confidence in myself as a singer.
Okay.
So I had a vocal coach who has helped me immensely. But yeah, no, I got that call understudy in a musical and I was like, oh, crap. Like, I can't do that.
Do they mind if I don't do the singing part?
Yeah. Can I just dance along?
Would that be okay?
Can they do that?
I move well. I do the chicken. Yeah, Emily, I know you can't see us, but she just started the chicken. Do, 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 wah, 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 wah.
I was like, when are they going to find out I'm a hack?
I don't know. But you're really good at the chicken dance, and you look like a chicken to me just now.
Should I put that on my special skills?
Absolutely.
It probably helps that I'm wearing overall.
Always.
Oshkosh bagosh.
See your Ohio roots.
I know.
Grandpa. All right. So they finally call you. You're about to stick a needle in your arm. But thank God they called you. It wasn't 5 or 5:20, but eventually they were like, actually,
it was around 6:45.
Emily Skaggs, you're going to Broadway.
Yeah.
And where were you? When that happened? You were lying on the bathroom floor.
I was at the Mermaid Inn enjoying their $1 oyster happy hour.
Good work. Good work.
I feel like even now there's that 20 seconds of celebration. Oh, my God, I got the job. And then followed by about 5 months of oh, my God, how the heck am I going to do this? And with Fun Home, that was especially true because I'd learned this role from watching someone else. And, you know, I walked in day one and I had to sort of forget everything I learned and start from square one.
It was a slight reinvention of the show when you guys moved.
Yeah. And, you know, finally I had the opportunity to do some table work and exploration of my own with the character. And, you know, it was hard. There were days where I remember this one day, you know, about 3 weeks for the Broadway run for rehearsal. I remember Sam one day saying, what you're doing right now, none of it is working, but we're going to figure it out. And that confidence of we are going to figure out as a group, you know, that I'm supported and that, you know, it's hard to hear nothing that you're doing is working, but to have someone have the confidence in you that, you know, we are going to figure it out is pretty.
More impressive to me is that you have the confidence in yourself. Right? Because that would be enough to make most people go, you know what? I'll be right back and find a corner and sob. Because that doesn't feel good.
There was a little bit of that. There was a little bit of that. We were rehearsing in this weird basement of this church on 57th Street?
Sounds very glamorous.
Yeah, there was a crypt in the corner.
Perfect.
It was very strange. It's where the Rockettes rehearse because it's a big enough room. It's sort of like the basement gymnasium of this church.
So the Rockettes rehearse in the basement gymnasium of a church on 57th Street that also has a crypt.
Yes,
And they turned down Trump? What? All right, I don't even understand what's happening right now. Okay, so somehow, I just want to say we figured it out, didn't we? Because we were nominated for a Tony.
Yes.
So what greater, I don't know, I don't think the word is revenge. I can't see you as a vengeful person.
Triumph.
That's right. Also, yeah. That all the Allisons were nominated.
I know.
It's kind of extraordinary.
I know.
Like, I mean, first of all, Sydney Lucas, there's that.
Yes.
Beth Malone, there's that. It's all I can do to keep myself from not asking you to spend this entire interview just singing. And I'm not going to make you. I'm going to make you. You're going to change your major to Alana at the very end.
I can already feel it. It's happening.
I would never in a million years compare my vocal stylings or talent to yours. But I do understand the thrill of there being a part of your career. There are things one can imagine. But if you haven't grown up doing musical after musical, and if you, like me, grew up loving musicals so much, I just know there are very few things in life where fantasy and reality crash in, and it is everything you hoped for.
That is so beautifully put.
When I got to be in a Broadway musical for a moment in my life, I literally could not believe that I was in a musical. And when people, like all of the cast members who were bona fide Broadway stars and singers, would like, I would never complain. There wasn't a second of it where I was like, I'm sorry. I felt like I'd like won a walk on. Like, I won the raffle and I get to walk on a Broadway stage with like Anthony Rapp. And like, it was just so crazy for me the entire year that that was in my life. And so I only bring that up because I understand the gloriousness of being in a Broadway musical when you have loved them. So
you know,
very much.
This is, I'm like biting my tongue because I'm just so excited hearing you talking about this because I saw You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown with my parents. It was one of those shows they took me to and it changed my life. I listened to that. That show was when I decided, oh, this is what I want to do. I was obsessed with that show. We listened to the Broadway cast recording constantly. I was just like fascinated with this idea of adults playing children in such like familiar ways. You know, it was a strange feeling. You know, I'm watching Charlie Brown and for some reason I felt seen. It still is a huge part of my life. I'm fangirling.
I'm so excited. I do feel like Alison Bechdel was able to put into graphic novel form, which is a very current way of doing cartoons. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of amazing to make it so accessible to people with pictures too. And I feel like that was such a unique experience as a theater goer to be in the presence of the Fun Home characters in that way. A lot came at you from your audience. I mean, it's a big responsibility when you're carrying a show like that, because you have a lot of people's hearts that you're taking with you during that time. I'm sure you're very full from that experience still.
I am. It was one of those shows where, you know, even if we did it 355 times, you could feel people in the audience and you could feel how important it was to them or how foreign and new it was to them. And it fueled us in a way, having them so close and having them, they were a part of the show.
Yeah.
There were times where I'd be singing the finale and there'd be someone sitting right in front of me and I can feel what they're feeling. It was a really incredible experience. And yeah, you know, I will say I feel as an actor, I've been very lucky to, you know, I sort of, these new projects where it's a script that's based on fiction where there, you know, all I have is this script and what the writer says, well, this character is that, you know, it's like, that's exciting. But what's more exciting is having a graphic novel.
Right.
And
where's the YouTube video of the person that I could write?
Yeah. Right. It's like,
so do you prefer that having done both now? Are you, I mean, to prefer it is maybe not the best way to phrase it, but so far,
you know, I think it's changed the way I approach roles that are not based on real people because I feel like playing someone real, there's a lot of responsibility to make sure that they feel well represented. And so now I try, if I get a fictionalized character, I try to think, okay, well, if this person in real life was seeing them and seeing their life, like how
How would they feel about it? Am I reaching a depth where I'm making this character as whole as possible? Am I showing their flaws as well as their perks? Am I making this a whole character that would feel well represented?
So now that you've sort of done long and short runs in the theater and have had a chance to do a bunch of stuff on screen since Fun Home between Salem and When We Rise, you're at the beginning of your work and your craft, and I'm sure you're trying to figure it out. So how has the approach to the work differed on stage and on screen?
I really do feel like I'm at the beginning. When I hear Tony nominated before my name, it's sort of like, what? That's ridiculous.
Funny.
But yeah, so I sort of feel like I'm just now getting to the point where I can walk into an audition and not be like totally terrified and actually do some craft, actually do some work in there. So, but the difference between theater and television for me, I've always gotten the note in theater, like, I know you're feeling something, but I'm not quite seeing it yet. A lot of the time in Fun Home, Sam was encouraging me to get bigger and get bigger and get bigger. And so I sort of feel like I was at I had an advantage when it came to switching over to TV and film. I feel like the difference between Medium Allison in Fun Home and Roma in When We Rise is, you know, they're both going through really similar things, trying to come to terms with who they are and their sexuality and how to carry that forward. But Roma is doing it in a quiet, under the skin, behind the eyes sort of way, whereas Medium Allison is singing a song about it. But those two things are rooted in the same feeling. And so it's just been a lot of sort of keeping it under rather than letting it bubble out into a song.
Because Fun Home was a long run, marvelously so.
Yeah.
Did you find yourself having certain rituals or pre-show things that you needed to do or superstitions or, oh my God, I forgot the red glove. Can I go on tonight? Or you, do you have any of those sorts of things?
That's really funny. I had a little pocket that they sewed into my pants with Velcro that was originally for my Fitbit, which was really stupid. And after a while, I was like, this is torturous.
Wait, Emily's Fitbit or Medium Allison? What?
Emily Skeggs' Fitbit. It's very embarrassing.
Little known fact, Emily Skeggs as Medium Allison had a Fitbit sewn into her pants. So you're conscious of fitness.
I am. And actually, we all sort of as a cast and crew on matinee days would work out in between shows.
We were really, by the crypt.
Yeah, right. Basically, in the basement of Circle in the Square, which some would say is crypt-like. So we were really, really tight-knit. It was a beautiful thing. My Fitbit pocket eventually turned into my Grethers pastille pocket. I became very, do you know about these things? They're incredible. Grethers pastilles.
Tell us about them.
Grethers pastilles.
I'm looking for sponsorship, so this would be great.
Wait, they're great.
Okay, we're going to do it.
Are you listening, Grethers?
Do you have a website that we could get 25% off at?
Okay. They come in like a tin. They're very old-fashioned. They're like a... They're
like an Altoids kind of tin with like the pretty writing on it? Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
They're incredible. They lubricate the throat in a way that... Well, you know, I guess they say it's in a way that a cough drop can't. But, you know, I got really – if I didn't have one in my pocket, I'd get really anxious.
And would you eat it during the play?
Yeah. And Roberta was like, you taste weird.
Like, well, you know what?
Well, sorry. You know I'd be like,
They are my sponsors. I have to eat these on stage. I get a dollar every time. So she would say you taste weird. And you'd be like,
sorry.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sorry, I love you, Roberta.
I love you. And the scene is, we're going to crush it tonight. You did. So other than that, you were okay. Would you guys warm up together?
Less as a group. I would always try to warm up. Roberta would, she's not a musical theater person. She would always do squats at places, which was great. We all sort of had our thing. By the end, we were gathering together, holding hands, praying to the great gay gods. And every day we would summon a great gay god, which was really beautiful and hilarious.
That's sweet. I feel like there should be playing cards.
Oh, my God.
Is yes. There, would they be my sponsors?
Yes.
The Great Gay Cards.
This is great.
Emily, we're on to something. We're quite entrepreneurial.
I think
we're
we
not
are.
Just actors.
I am also an artist, a visual artist.
So you could make things and we could sell them.
Yes, this is my downfall, actually.
This little known fact, you have way too many talents.
I gather like, oh, all these scraps of paper, I could do something with them. And then they just pile up in the corner.
I have a feeling that's not true. I have a feeling you make things.
I do make things. I live in the same apartment I grew up in with my parents. And so stuff piles up.
So will we see your family like on an episode of Hoarders, or it's not quite that extreme?
You know, I always sort of morbidly joke that we're like one emotional crisis away from
okay. So if we keep things okay for you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you
if
an only child?
If the sponsorship comes through.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm an only child. My parents tried a lot. And
but they got it so right.
Yes, one.
One perfect. They broke yes. the mold. Were they trying before you or after you to have more kids?
Both. So I'm their special baby. I'm very lucky. They've been incredibly supportive of me, and they are still incredibly supportive of me and supportive of my friend. My mom, you know, she's just incredible. She's always loved the arts so much, and she's wanted to support the arts. So, you know, we had a friend who was doing a program at the City Company for a year, and she slept on our couch and lived in our living room. You know, about 2.5 years ago, my boyfriend was moving from Boston to New York, and they were like, well, he should just move in with us. And so we all live together. It's pretty.
I hope my kids feel that way and will stay and just bring their. My fantasy is exactly that, that rather than them leaving, they will bring their special people in their lives to come be with us. Like nothing would make me happier.
They are so lucky. They are so lucky to have
it you. Really would feel that way. I wanted to ask you in terms of when you say having a boyfriend, obviously you have become someone that a lot of people look to in the lesbian community mm-hmm. or in the gay community, just people who feel like they want to see themselves represented in the work. And you've played in particular real leaders, whether you're playing Alison Bechdel or Roma Guy or just the people that you've been taking on. And I even read a quote somewhere when I was researching you, I think it was in 17 magazine, where they basically asked young people when they knew that they were gay or bi. And one young girl said that she doesn't live in New York, so she probably saw a clip of Fun Home on YouTube mm-hmm. or something. And she said that she saw Changing My Major song, and she watched you, and she felt like, that's me. And she thought you were really beautiful. So it was a combination of that's me and I would like Emily Skeggs to be my girlfriend. I think it was that's a two-part question. You know, I had Ben Platt on the show, and he's had to come to terms with, I'm actually not socially in trouble
right.
all the time, the way my character in Dear Evan Hansen is. And
right.
I have to learn to be okay with that. And my audience needs to understand that after the show, I am not still Evan Hansen.
Right.
And sometimes he feels like, I don't want to disappoint them, that we aren't the same if they're responding so deeply to the part.
That's real. That's a very real feeling. And I feel for him in that. I think that I've never tried to hide the fact that, you know, I'm deeply in love with a man. I've never, you know, he's all over my Instagram. I'm obsessed with him.
In a totally healthy way.
In a very, I have
he really is my boyfriend.
I promise.
call me.
Oh, my God. Imagine.
But that's another show.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like the same day that I bought a mechanics jumpsuit, he bought a pink phone. In the biggest way, it's not about gender for the two of us. And I think that, you know, my best friend from college, he asked me, he was like, are people asking you this question? And I was like, well, sort of, not quite yet. And he was like, you're queer. He was like, you are part of the queer community in a big way. And I think there are a lot of things about the queer community that I really identify with. So, you know, it's a funny thing.
There's a lot of fluidity.
There's
in
a
your
lot of fluidity.
Life experience.
Yeah, there's a lot of fluidity, and I think we live in a time where things aren't as straightforward and clear cut.
Can I ask, as someone who's from a different generation,
yeah,
and completely like learning as I go, because, you know, when I was in college, the pronoun they,
yeah,
was not in use. Like there's ways our language is changing. There's way roles are changing, expectations are changing. And I love everything about it.
Right.
To my core. But would you explain to me, and I know there's not one definition, when you say queer, what does that mean to you?
For me in particular, being straight is not a big defining thing in my life.
Right.
I see myself as a human that loves many other humans. And it's hard. I don't want to get in trouble because I know that gender is a difficult situation right now for a lot of people. But I don't necessarily wake up and say, oh, I have to dress like this because I have a vagina.
Right.
A couple of months ago, I was flying. We were – or I guess that was about a year ago. We were shooting When We Rise, and I was flying from Vancouver to San Francisco. And there was a misprint on the roster or whatever on the plane, and Mr. Skeggs was my name. And I was dressed in – like, I definitely looked like a young man.
Right.
And they said, Mr. Skeggs. I didn't really hear them. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's me, Skeggs. Yeah, sure. And
I'll take the gluten-free.
Yeah, right.
I'll have a special meal. Thank you.
And they sort of went, okay. And they called me young man the entire flight. Young man, here's your lemonade, Mrs. Skeggs. And, you know, it didn't bother me. That doesn't – I don't have a preference. I know that there are people that do, though. And so I didn't want to – sort of taint it for the next person who it really mattered for. You know,
right.
if they thought I really wanted to be called young man, they were doing a beautiful job of it. And, you know, I have someone who I'm very close with who's transitioning who was really worried about flying specifically because of TSA. And so it gave me a lot of hope.
Yeah.
It gave me a lot of hope. So I think in that sort of a small, strange way, I feel very connected to the queer community. I cannot deny, and I would never want to hide who I am. You know, I am a cisgendered female who is in love with a cisgendered male, but I think very much so that I'm a part of that world in a way, and I'm very honored to be. And I think it also comes with a lot of responsibility. A lot of the projects I've been doing lately are queer-centric projects. That's not the only reason I've been doing them, though. They're very socially important. That's the first thing that matters to me, is this role that I think is socially important. Yes. And right now we're really lucky that we're in an era where the stories that are being told are these stories that haven't necessarily been told.
Yeah,
that's incredible. My sort of wandering spiel about.
We call them WSs. They are wandering spiels about things that are really important, yeah, to us. And the respect that you offer up is all anyone can ask for.
Well, and it's still something I'm sort of trying to figure out.
Sure.
Still, you know, it is a funny thing. I didn't start my career saying I want to play a gaggle of, you know, lesbian icons. That wasn't something that I was aiming for, but it's something that I'm so grateful I found.
And also, you're just channeling each time something really special between you and the person. It's been just breathtaking to watch. Now, I wanted to ask you, although I would say your Fun Home audition at the Public definitely circles the question of auditions that are perhaps funny in retrospect or can be an anecdotal joy right now, but at the time really challenged your confidence. Does anything come to mind from your...
Oh, God. Yeah, okay. So I've always been someone that learns better by doing than
reading the directions.
And reading the... Yes. Yeah, I'm not...
That's my entire baking life.
Me
and
too.
That's the worst thing to not follow directions on.
Why
it's actually science.
Yeah, it is science. It's science.
I know, but I can't.
Oh, God, it's awful.
It's good enough. It's good enough, Emily.
Yeah. Well, and I've been really lucky that I think that I've learned by doing in auditioning and haven't like royally screwed up. At this point, I've learned what is right and what is not right to do, but I think I did it in a pretty safe way in the moment.
Okay.
I was very lucky. So this one audition that is mortifying. I can't even – it's hard to even think
about. So tell the story with your eyes closed, and then it'll be easier.
Oh, God. It's even worse. In college, I went to Emerson College in Boston, but I was coming back to New York like maybe once a month to audition for stuff. I was still very much rooted in New York and wanted to be working. I had this audition, you know, I was like, I think it was in the middle of midterms or something. So I was very distracted. And at that point, I was like, you have the paper in front of you and you read the lines and, you know, you'll be fine. You know, now I understand the importance of reading a script and really making sure that you are you've
prepared.
Read the whole script. Yes, prepared. What a novel idea.
Sure.
But at the time, you know, I was a little kid and, you know, I was distracted by like college and I went into this audition and, you know, I was marginally prepared. And he said, well, do you have any questions? And I was just being completely cheeky and ridiculous. And I said, well, what happens in the end? Mm-hmm. And he took none of it. He was like, are you kidding me? You didn't read the script. That's your job. And I was mortified. And I am mortified telling it now.
So you didn't get that job?
No, surprisingly, no. I did not book that job.
Okay. Well, I think lesson learned.
Lesson hard learned.
Right. And not necessarily that you have to read it, but just act like you did. If nothing else.
Learn how to fake it, Skeggs.
That's right. Come on. Fake it, Skeggs. That's her Instagram name. Well, fake it, Skeggs. Now comes the portion of the show where you just sing for the next 30 minutes. I am like, I'm changing my major to Emily. I know I'm not original in saying that, but I am.
My heart.
I am just
I don't want to
so,
stop talking with you.
You know what? So let's just, we'll turn off the microphones and then we'll just go get
okay.
lunch and it'll be fine.
Great.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank
I am
you.
Just so happy. If you want more information about my guests, go to the website littleknownfactspodcast.com. I also wanted to tell you that there is now a new addition to the website. It is a button that says contributions. This podcast is a true labor of love, and I really, really want to keep doing it for a long time. So if you like listening as much as I love to do it, please feel free to contribute. It would mean the world to me. Also, on Twitter, you can find me at Alana Levine. Instagram is Little Known Facts Podcast, and on Facebook, Little Known Facts Podcast. You can also feel free to rate and review the show on the iTunes show page. This podcast is recorded at Hanger Studios in New York City. This episode was brought to you by Pro Media. Located in Times Square, Pro Media offers both production and post-production services out of its beautiful studios in the heart of New York City. Pro Media, sound vision. Find out more at promedia.nyc.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.